Now listen to the title of this book, Edgar Cayce and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. That'll give you an idea of what we're talking about with Joanne DiMaggio when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Back in 1936, Edgar Cayce, the most renowned psychic of the 20th century and the father of holistic medicine, gave a life reading for Thomas Jefferson Davis, the two-day-old nephew of his secretary, Gladys Davis. In this reading, Cayce identified one of the child's past lives as that of Thomas Jefferson. That's right, adding this stunning prediction that he may become more important in the affairs of the world than this entity in its previous experience has been to America, Thomas Jefferson. Amazing. Joanne DiMaggio with us has been actively involved with Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment since 1987 and has been the coordinator for ARE in Charlottesville since August of 2008. She earned her master's degree in transpersonal studies and her spiritual mentor certification through Atlantic University. She's been professionally pursuing past life research and therapy for more than 30 years and once headed her own past life research center where she interacted with some of the country's leading past life professionals. A couple of her books include Your Soul Remembers, I Did It to Myself, and the latest Edgar Cayce and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. Joanne, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. Hi, George. So good to be back with you.
Looking forward to this. And perfect timing for this, too. You do such a great job. How'd you get involved in all this?
With this book, you mean?
Everything, the supernatural, the works that you do.
Oh, gosh. Well, it all goes back to, I have to blame Shirley MacLaine for all this.
Really?
Yeah. Because in 1987, that's when her book, Out on a Limb, became a miniseries.
Right.
And I think that was the big wake-up call for a lot of us sleeping metaphysicians. So I had read about reincarnation as a teenager, and I had read about Edgar Cayce, and I was fascinated by it because it just made a lot of sense to me, and then sort of forgot about it. And then when Shirley's miniseries came out, it was it just piqued my interest again, and so I have been pursuing it ever since.
Well, that's great. I had Shirley MacLaine on a guest a couple years ago. She had a coughing spell. And we had to cut it short. I mean, she was just gaggy,
yeah,
practically.
I took over for her. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I was supposed to be on an hour.
You saved us.
And then I took her last hour.
You saved us.
Oh, gosh. Now, I was honored, really, to take her spot.
Now, tell us a little bit about T.J. Davis. And did you ever meet T.J.?
Oh, yeah. We're good friends. He lives here in Charlottesville.
So he would be how old right now?
He would be 84.
84 years old. Okay, tell us about this incredible story.
Well, as I said, I joined the ARE back in 1987 because, you know, once I watched that miniseries again, I couldn't get enough. And I thought, where do you get information about metaphysics or esoteric studies? And so, you know, I knew about the ARE, so I joined. And then a friend of mine knew that I was interested in both reincarnation and in history because I had been a history major in college. And so she just happened to tell me that, you know, Cayce did this life reading on this baby and he identified him as not only Thomas Jefferson but also Alexander the Great. So he had two famous past lives. And so I went and read the reading, and I was fascinated. So I tried to get in touch with some people at the ARE because I wanted to get in touch with TJ, but nobody there was willing to connect us. So it wasn't until 1995 I moved to Charlottesville. I was unaware that he and his family had also moved here from Virginia Beach. But somehow, by divine orchestration, we finally met through a mutual friend in 1996. So we've been friends since then.
And tell us your interest with Edgar Cayce. How did that evolve?
Well, like I said, I was looking for a place that I could learn more. And I, you know, came across the ARE. And I don't know that I knew of any other professional organization that had a membership base that was based on teachings and philosophy of someone like Casey. And so I became a member and very quickly got involved with the organization and just, you know, learned by attending the conferences that they would host and reading the books about him that so many authors have written, and going in and studying the readings for myself, and then just being around Casey people. It was really an exciting time, and I consider Casey my mentor, my greatest spiritual teacher.
Oh my God, yeah. That is a picture of Casey on the cover of your book, holding, I assume, little T.J. Davis.
That's him. Mm-hmm. And I love that picture because you could see the love in his face for that little baby.
And the little baby back.
Yes.
He's pretty alert for a little guy.
He is, yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, what is, with the T.J. Davis of today who's in his 80s, mm-hmm. what do you see that is so special about him?
Well, when we have conversations, it's unlike any conversation that I have with anybody else. It's just mesmerizing. And that's what the book is really about how Mr. Casey mentored him for the first 8.5 years of TJ's life. You know, he gave him that reading, and that reading was very problematic for him. Imagine you're 2 days old, and this great man tells your family that you had been Jefferson and Alexander the Great, and that you could do for the world what Jefferson did for this country. What do you do with that information?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so what I was curious about was, how did this affect his life? What was his life like? That had to be a tremendous burden for a child. So I wanted to know more about it. So after we met, I organized some gatherings here in Charlottesville for where he could tell his story, because he had not told his story. He said he didn't really feel comfortable to share that information. He would say, yeah, I would say something like, yeah, in my past life I was Thomas Jefferson. And he said he'd wait. There was a pause because he's waiting for everybody to start laughing. And you know, they didn't, because they were just mesmerized by him. He's had that charisma, and he commanded the attention of a group of people, and told wonderful stories about his years with Mr. Casey. So I think he's a very special soul. I was primarily interested in telling his story because he had taken such a bad rap all these years because he never fulfilled Casey's prophecy of doing for the world what Jefferson did for this country. I wanted to find out why.
Did you find that out?
I did. Yeah, and that's what the story is. The book traces his life from before he was born, actually, through his years with Mr. Casey, through Casey's death, and then TJ starts telling stories about his life. But it's really about the soul's free will and choices that are made. So Casey saw this great future for this soul that was many times entrusted to his care for long periods of time, and he gave very explicit instructions on how to raise this child. But TJ's parents didn't follow those instructions. And when Mr. Casey died, TJ was like almost 9 years old, and nobody continued his education,
mm-hmm.
He just sort of was thrown from pillar to post and became very disillusioned and, you know, didn't really even consider trying to fulfill that destiny that Casey saw for him.
So he didn't follow in Casey's footsteps at all?
No, he didn't.
Does he regret that?
Yeah, of course he does.
He does.
His biggest regret is that he didn't get the education that he was supposed to get, that Casey had chosen for him. You know, you have to remember, his parents really did not want a baby. They had gambling problems. They were both alcoholics.
Oh, God.
And he knew that coming in. He said, you know, he wanted to get to Mr. Casey because Mr. Casey was part of his soul family. And he said, I knew he had a plan for me, but I had to get to him somehow. And he said he couldn't come in through Casey and his wife because they were too old by the time TJ's soul looked in on them and thought, I want to come down there with them. He couldn't come in through his Aunt Gladys because she wasn't married or having children. So he thought, I'll come in through Gladys's brother and his wife, and that way I'll be Gladys's nephew and I'll have access to Mr. Casey. It was really quite ingenious when you think about it. His parents just were not well suited to raising a child, which is a blessing for TJ initially, because that enabled him to spend all those years living in the Casey household.
Well, the fact that he didn't fulfill Casey's destiny that he had for him, does that make him a failure?
I think that, you know, after all the years I spent doing research on this book, and it was like an 8-year project.
Well, that's huge.
Yeah, I would go to the archives at the Edgar Casey Foundation, and I would go through, I had his permission to go into his file and to read his file there and read all the letters that were written back and forth from Casey to his family and such. And, you know, I think that he really had hoped to do what Mr. Casey saw for him, but he said that, I think personally, George, that what Mr. Casey meant by that in that reading was that TJ would share the Casey teachings and the Casey readings to the world. That's why he was grooming him from the time he was, like, old enough to sit out on the pier and hold a fishing pole. They'd go out on the pier by the lake behind Casey's house, and Casey would mentor him there. He would teach him about reincarnation, about how to read auras, about the creation story. And I think he was grooming him, really, to take over the ARE, continue in his footsteps with sharing that work. Because TJ has said to me on many occasions, he said, you know, all the answers to humanity's problems are contained in those readings. He said, but, you know, getting people to go there and read them is the issue. He says, and I know I can do that. I know I can reach people. And I think certainly having the charisma of a Thomas Jefferson, or people thinking he had been Thomas Jefferson, draws people to him, and they would listen to what he would have to say. So I really think it had more to do with the Casey work than it did about any sort of global initiative.
Is Thomas Jefferson Davis his real name?
It is, and actually Casey gave him that name. When he came to Casey, after he was born, he had been sort of sloshing around 9 months in a womb that was full of alcohol. So he was near death when he was born.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said he was like wood. And the doctor told his parents, he's not going to live more than 3 days. You better plan his funeral. So Casey told Gladys, bring him to me. And Gladys brought him to him, and Casey did a reading on him right then and there and said, you know, give him some carnation milk and he'll be fine. She did, and he was. But he didn't have a name at that time, so when the doctor came to give him a checkup, he brought a blank birth certificate. And without hesitation, Edgar said, call him Thomas Jefferson.
Did he get any of Edgar Casey's abilities?
No.
He did not?
No.
Well, that's disappointing for him, I guess, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, in terms of he can't...
He doesn't do readings or anything like that.
He doesn't do readings or things like that, but he has that. He has the knowledge, you know, because, like, he was just this little boy on this pier, and Casey was pouring all of this wisdom into that vessel of that little boy.
Could Casey have picked the wrong guy?
I don't think so, because they had been together many, many lifetimes before that. They were all part of that same soul group. But like I said, it was free will. It was, you know, you could, I don't know that Casey was ever wrong. in his readings.
He was pretty accurate on his health readings, I'll tell you that.
Yes. And so, and he would never give anybody, you know, more than four lifetimes, because you can't work on more than that at any given time. So for him to say this, and then all through the years they were together, there are little stories, things that, like when TJ was 2.5 years old.
Casey was like his father.
Who?
Casey was like TJ's father.
Yeah, he was. He looked at him that way. He said, I couldn't call him Dad, so he called him Eddie Cakey.
Eddie Cakey?
Eddie Cakey. And, he was, because he had no male role models in his life. His father was never around. You know, he went years without seeing his dad. And so, you know, he would look to Gladys as more a mother figure than an aunt, and then Casey just you know, he took him under his wing. I mean, they would do all sorts of things together. They would go to the movies, they would go on scavenger hunts, and you know, the things that little TJ saw living in the Casey household were just incredible and made such an impression on him. He thought that was the way the whole world was. He thought other children had the same kind of a home life that he did. But he quickly found out that wasn't true.
Well, what was the destiny that Edgar Casey said TJ was supposed to have?
Well, it was that part about doing for the world what Jefferson did for this country. So when you think about the impact that Jefferson had on this country, now Casey's broadening it out to having that kind of an impact.
I mean, was he saying that the TJ was supposed to get into politics or what?
He never said. He never really... See, he was supposed to give TJ a second life reading when TJ was 13 years old. And he never got that reading because Casey died. And so TJ is convinced that that second reading would have given him more of a idea about what he was supposed to be doing.
What did he end up doing for a life
Oh, gosh. Career? He just did a little bit of everything. He was... He was a DJ at one point. He was in a jazz band at one point. He was selling retail shoes.
Would you say he was successful?
No.
He was not. No,
he's never successful. No. Matter of fact, his last job before he retired was roasting coffee beans.
Is he listening to you tonight?
No.
He's not. Okay.
No.
I mean,
he lives, he lives a very remote life. He lives up on a mountain, and he doesn't have internet service. Because I've said to him, I said, you know, when this book comes out, people are going to want to talk to you. So with COVID and everything, it's been difficult, you know, to get together. So I'm going to actually be doing a Zoom program, hopefully in April. And I'm hoping I can get him.
Are you going to be at the Ozark Martin event in April by Zoom?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing that for them.
April. That's interesting because
they're your publisher.
Book.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't even know.
Give those people a call and say, get me on this program.
Yeah.
I'll do a Zoom interview with you.
Yeah.
We can do that.
This book is really. Has a life of its own now. I was surprised the other day. I was on Facebook and I saw the picture of the book and I thought, I didn't post that. And here, message after message after message, but it was all in Japanese.
Really?
And I hit the translation button and they went crazy for this book. There's a big group of Casey people out in Japan. And
Casey people everywhere, Joanne.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. I want to talk with you about general reincarnation when we come back, and then we'll take calls in our last hour. Her latest book, Edgar Casey and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Joanne DiMaggio with us. Her latest book is Edgar Casey and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. And, of course, we will take your calls next hour. We're going to get into reincarnation in just a second. So did Edgar Casey truly believe that little T.J. Davis was Thomas Jefferson Reborn?
Absolutely. No doubt in his mind.
What do you think?
I approached this book as a reporter, so I wanted to be objective about it. There are times when I think, yeah, there he is, and other times I'm not so sure. So I think everybody will have to come to their own conclusion after they read, all of the evidence in the book, the things that he was able to do, memories that came through for him, what other people said about him. A lot of people knew his reading at the ARE, and they were always looking for signs of Jefferson in him. And Casey even said that when he was 2 1/2, he recited part of the Declaration of Independence and said that he wrote it. He insisted that he wrote it. And he did that again when he was in high school. He freshman final exam in history, when he got the questions, he realized he didn't have the answers. He didn't know what to write. And so he said, well, I've got to write something. He says, so he opened himself up to the universe. And I think he was using a form of soul writing, which, I've written about that too. And he wrote out the Declaration of Independence and the Statute for Religious Freedom in Virginia and handed that in to his teacher. And he said, here, this is all I know about history. You could pass me or fail me, whatever you want to do. And the teachers were just flabbergasted because he was sitting right in front of them. They knew he didn't cheat, but he had written it out word for word. So there's stories like that all through the book that, you sit there and you go, oh, my God, he must have been Jefferson. He was pulling on those memories. But, if you ask him, he'll say, I've asked him before, I said, do you think you were Jefferson because you remember being mm-hmm. Jefferson, or do you think you were Jefferson because Mr. Casey told you you were? And he said, he's always said it's because Mr. Casey told him. So, he's very humble, too, George. He doesn't really go around
He doesn't tell people, I'm telling you. Yeah, exactly.
And most of the people, when I've done regressions on people, most of those that are genuinely had a famous past life, they are humble. They don't brag about it. But the people who, I do get quite a few people who believe that they were somebody famous on the flimsiest of evidence. I had somebody who said she thought she was Patrick Henry because she said, he's a good talker and so am I. Well, there's more to it than that, So that whole issue about famous past lives is one that I'm getting asked a lot more about now that this book has come out than before. So it's really quite fascinating.
What does his family say about him?
He's not married at the moment, so I don't really know.
Okay.
What his wife thought. His children.
I mean, they're aware of this?
They're aware, but I don't know that they're that supportive of it.
Okay.
When you imagine if your father was telling people that he was Thomas Jefferson, and you're just, you're...
It's one of those aha moments, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. So I don't think that's something they put out to the public too much.
Let's talk a little bit about reincarnation, Joanne. You're a believer in that, obviously, aren't you, as a reporter?
Oh, yeah. I'm a reincarnationist.
What do you think it is? What is reincarnation? And how soon does it, develop? A person dies, their soul goes to wherever. How soon do you think it gets reincarnated again?
Between 50 and 200 years is the average.
Okay.
Unless you're suicide, and then they come back immediately.
Oh, they do? Really?
Yes, because it's like, you think of the Earth as a school, and you're here to learn certain lessons.
Is it a punishment?
No, not at all. You dropped out of school. You didn't complete the courses that you signed up to take, so you've got to come back and...
You skip class.
Yeah, exactly. So you got to come back and take that class again. And oftentimes it's a little bit more difficult the second time around, which is one of the reasons people should try to, I'm not a psychologist, but, just kind of hang in there and work through that karma that's causing you so much pain and difficulty, because That's where past life regression comes in, understanding your past lives. If you know the source of the issues that you're dealing with now, you know that they came from another lifetime. And oftentimes, just knowing the source, the origin of those problems, can do a great deal of healing, which is why many people only have one regression and they get what they need and that's it. It's not like going, you know, to a regular psychotherapist where you're going week after week after week after week. This is much more pointed to exactly what the initial reason is for whatever issues you're dealing with now. So in TJ's case, you know, Jefferson was terrible with money. You know, he died bankrupt. And TJ has had an equally difficult time with money in this life. So a lot of the issues from the Jefferson life do pop up in this life karmically. I think the one that he's most concerned about is the issue of slavery. Because in this life, he's just the opposite. You know, he truly believes in equality. He was the first Caucasian who joined the NAACP in Virginia Beach. I think they were in Norfolk at the time, but because Gladys's husband, Al Turner, was very involved with the NAACP and
Civil Rights.
And TJ's family comes from part of his family comes from Selma, Alabama. So he was, you know, working on that as well. But that is the part of the Jefferson life that he is most ashamed of, I would say, and has worked really in this life to try to overcome that.
Does reincarnation eventually stop for somebody?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a point where you don't need to incarnate anymore. You know, when we're in spirit, we cannot experience the things that we can experience when we're in a physical body. So certain emotions, you know, you don't experience that in spirit. So at the point of creation, when we all came in together as souls, we decided we wanted to experience all of this. And the only place to experience it was on the earth. And so that's why I equate the earth as a school. It's like you get your curriculum, you work with your guides before you come in. That was my last book was on what goes on between lives, and I was on your show, I think, to talk about that. And you plan what it is you're going to work on. What are your karmic issues? What are the things you're going to be working on in this life? And then you come in, and then you have members of your soul family who will come in with you to say, I'm going to help you with this, so I'm going to come in as your parents, your grandparents, your spouses, your lovers, your friends, your colleagues, whatever. And this is the role that I'm going to play to help you learn that lesson. And you come to a point where you've learned all the lessons and there's no need to come back anymore.
I've always thought that about reincarnation, too. You just keep coming back until you reach that level of perfection, mm-hmm. and you don't need to come back anymore.
Right. Yeah. You can if you want to, just to kind of have fun or be a guide for somebody, but you wouldn't have to at that point.
And it's done primarily to what, train the soul?
To work out karmic issues that you've acquired in another lifetime, and so it's all about your soul's growth, and about learning all that you need to learn that you can only learn on the earth, and then just moving on. So, you know, we're all companions of the creative forces, which is God. That's how we were created, to be companions. And so I think that we there's a lot we need to learn to be at that level. And so we just continue to come back. And, you know, one lifetime we'll learn about greed. Another lifetime we're going to learn about a chronic illness, maybe, or about responsibility, or about abandonment. So we have all these things that we can learn and grow as we learn those. Because once you learn them, that's it. You don't need to repeat that class again. You've passed. You can move on to the next class.
Do you think Jesus has reincarnated?
I don't know, honestly. I would say I don't think so. If I had a choice, I don't think so.
I would say that, too. He's probably at the right hand somewhere.
I mean, why would he? You know, he, talk about perfection and not needing to incarnate. He didn't need to incarnate in the first place. Although, there's been books written about Jesus' past lives, and which are fascinating. But I personally, I don't think so.
How many do you think he had?
Gosh, you know, I've actually sat through presentations on this, and I think that they mentioned maybe six or seven.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, they're mostly in the biblical times, or before that, but I don't remember all of who they were.
Do you think that people who reincarnate and come back are better people than when they passed on the first time or second time or third time?
By better, I don't know. Are they, it isn't a steady upward climb. We can gain and we can lose, and we can gain and we can lose. Like even with Casey, at one point he was Rata, priestess in Egypt. Very high level, and then he was the riverboat gambler Bainbridge. Depending on what we're working on, depending on the issues that we're working on, because it's all about balance. And so, you might have an exemplary life in one life, and then you may have one which is fraught with all sorts of difficulties and hardships in another. And then you might have another one in which you come back and you're just kind of skating along because you're taking a respite from maybe some difficult work that you did in the previous life or something challenging that's going to come up in the next one.
Have you ever been regressed, Joanne, yourself?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think a good past life regressionist is worth their weight unless they've actually worked on their own past lives. So, I was almost like a junkie in the beginning. I couldn't get enough of it. But primarily on one life I was working on, and that I wasn't always given a different life each time.
How many lives do you think you had?
I was told, and I don't remember them all, I was told I've had about 150 lives.
150?
Yeah.
Whoa!
Yes, I'm an old soul, which means I'm a slow learner, George, and I have to keep coming back because I don't quite get it. And I have to come back again.
Maybe you just like good old planet Earth or something, huh?
I like pizza and Italian beef sandwich.
do people reincarnate, assuming there's life on other planets, and that's a pretty good assumption, do they reincarnate to those planets too, or are these just Earth bump situations?
Casey talks about other planet, one in particular that souls go to do some work there. But it's different than coming to the Earth. Casey said whatever is begun on the Earth has to end on the Earth. So it's not like you say, well, I'm going to work on greed in my next life because I was pretty greedy in my last one, and I want to come back and figure out how does that feel and what are the ramifications of that. But you don't go to another planet to work on that. You stay here on Earth. But, and that's the answer to the question about how many number of souls are there and compared to the population. You know, we're not all here at the same time, obviously. We go off and do some work elsewhere. We do work while we're in spirit, between lives. There's no time in spirit, so it's hard to say. I mean, when I told you 50 to 200 years, that's about the average of what most regression therapists have discovered in their work with their clients. But there's no set rule for that. You come back when the environment is right for you. That's why, you take your time and choose your parents and that gives you the socioeconomic background that you that would be ideal for you in that lifetime in order to work on the issues that you're coming in with.
Why do you think little T.J. Davis never fulfilled what Edgar Cayce believed he was destined for?
Well, throughout the readings and in the letters that Cayce wrote, he would always say that he can do the things that he saw him doing, provided. There was always this only if, and that was to he had the proper training in his formative years. And so Cayce was adamant about this part of his development. And he wanted him to go to the school out in New Hampshire. It was called the High Mowing School. It's still there. It's in Wilton, Wilton, New Hampshire. It was the first Waldorf high school in North America. And Cayce had given the founder of that school, Beulah Emmett, he had given her a reading. And she had been in previous lifetimes in Greece and in Atlantis. And both of those lives would have placed her in the same period as TJ, when he was Alexander in Greece and when he was in Atlantis.
That's interesting. Joanne, stay with us. We'll talk more when we come back, and we'll take phone calls next.